Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which, according to the Prime Minister, is good for the economy, because now everybody can get a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. And my very special guest is William Klaus. Welcome back. And we were talking over the break about, how do I control my swearing? And yes. Is it because I'm a pro now? Occasionally stuff slips out. And what's interesting is because I'm sort of jovial in this, and the show's kind of fun. My guests tend to swear on this broadcast quite regularly. They just feel comfortable enough. Hey, Vinny's, fun, and let's just say the F word and that kind of thing. And I always have to apologise to the affiliates and then tell everybody about the FCC regulations, and then I have to remind the FCC that I want to say to them F you, and that kind of thing. So. It's a process. I think it took quite a long time before I was able to really get control of it. And every now and again, something will slip out, in a pregnancy type of way, and afterwards there's ironically a pregnant pause. Now, kind of like a cat with kittens.
Exactly.
Pregnant pause.
Yeah. So where were we?
I don't recall. I think we were talking about... Wait. Actually, over the break, we were talking about how seven people might need to say something to you before it'll register. And you were saying that you really appreciated the opportunity to get on and tell your story and say, well, everybody's got a story. And there could be, right now, listening to this, a dozen people or so for whom... six people have already talked to them about something like this that they've ignored, and now they're suddenly getting it. Now the penny is dropping, and I think that's really beautiful. That's what the show's really about, man. Just let people tell their story, and you never know what the positive ramifications might be.
Yeah, you just gotta project it out there, give people a chance. And that's what I think these blogs and these podcasts were. That I had sort of ignored, and I probably had people recommending a blog or a podcast 4 or 5 times, but for whatever reason, I broke through into a certain community online, like I said, through Psychedelic Salon and The Secret Sun. And like I said, I can't stress enough how important The Secret Sun and Christopher Knoll's work was, because he was doing something so profoundly in touch with whatever spiritual path I thought I was on, because he was putting out content of such a high caliber for free. This was the type of material written at such a high level with such insight and with such passion about the subject matter that it was so compelling to know that someone was putting this out there for free just to get the message out there. And I cannot thank his contributions enough. Because I would pay $50 for an old Crowley book or $35 for an out-of-print Robert Anton Wilson book. And Christopher Knowles was writing a material that was just as important, and it was free, and it was daily or 5 times a week. And plus, to take this to the next place, was he was putting other authors, other bloggers on his page that were sort of friends of the tribe kind of thing. And this is where I discovered a blog by a gentleman named Mark LeClaire, who blogs under the name The Wrong Way Wizard. And it was Mark LeClaire's work on Stanley Kubrick at his website that took me to the next phase of this journey.
I've had Mark on the show.
He is eloquent, has a great sense of humor.
The coolest thing about him is he smokes a pipe. while he's on webcam during the show. It was great. It was so wizardy, bro. So wizardy.
Ultra wizard, bro. Yeah, Mark's great. And he put Stanley Kubrick on a pedestal saying that this is important. There's something about Kubrick that you need to investigate. And this is where I sort of linked a chain, because as I started, because I had seen Kubrick's movies growing up. I had seen 2001 as a 10-year-old on cable with the monkeys. I had seen Full Metal Jacket. I had seen The Shining, a movie that I hated. I had read Stephen King's book and thought that the movie adaptation was horrible. It was boring. I didn't get it. It made me feel creepy in a way I didn't know, but I rejected it. So I was like, how does Kubrick enter into this mystery? And as I started to study Kubrick, I realized that, okay, 2001, A Space Odyssey. James Joyce's number one novel of the 20th century, Ulysses, is a retelling of the Odyssey, right? Also, in a quote by Kubrick, he says that in 2001, A Space Odyssey, I have convoluted Marshall McLuhan, where instead of the medium is the message is the medium. So now all of a sudden, I have this sort of, I've cracked the seal of this impenetrable figure in James Joyce, and I have this line that goes, Kubrick, Marshall McLuhan, and James Joyce. And Marshall McLuhan was a James Joyce scholar for his early career. And for some reason, now all of a sudden, I have Kubrick, Joyce, McLuhan. And I have these, I have this, it was the damnedest thing, because it was, it just broke down the wall. It just, it was.
Or rather, somebody threw a Kubrick through your window.
Another Kubrick in the wall, my friend. And Mark LeClaire at The Wrong Way Wizard was writing about this subject matter at such an elite and insightful level that I feel like I leapfrogged from first grade all the way into college. I just felt like it was at the right place at the right time, and I started to really figure something out where I had for about 4 years been completely stuck, and the engine started to roar up again, and I all of a sudden had this new Corvette instead of the rusty old Chevy jalopy that was on a, you know, a cinder block in my driveway. And I jumped into this machine that was
like
gifted
a DeLorean.
To me. Yeah, absolutely. 88 miles per hour, brother. And I just took off. And it was the beginning of 3 years of just intense study and reawakening and fine-tuning my psychic lens. You know, it was going from standard definition into 1080i. You know, it just was high-definition time. And I started to...
Do you know what the difference between ADD and ADHD is?
I don't, Vinny.
The picture quality.
Well, I'd rather have the ADHD, I think. How about you? What do you have?
Honestly... I've got 3D.
3D, baby. Well, this is all about 4D, man. This is the fourth dimension. This is what they're talking about. This is what Joyce was tapping into at the beginning, turn of the century. And you see this in the surrealists, in Dali and Picasso and Relativity. You see this understanding of how the fourth dimension is trying to be communicated in media and trying to basically, I don't know, it's attempting to program your operating system through television, film, and music and propaganda. And McLuhan is diving into this. And Kubrick is basically saying, well, if Joyce got there with literature, I'm going to go there with film. Because if it can be thought, it can be filmed. And this was sort of like the textbook of the 20th century. This is sort of the conspiracy of your own mind and saying, I'm going to take the reins on this and I'm going to start programming my own operating system. I'm not going to be content with the one that was given to me. And out of this absolute fast track that I was on, I started a email dialogue with Mark LeClaire that would lead me to this thing I call the Kubrick Transformer, which in a nutshell is sort of like a media-based evidence of the fourth dimension's relationship to the third dimension. It's a dream catcher. It's something unexplainable and something that forces you to find an explanation for it, because it is the ultra weird right there in front of your eyes and ears. And it was sort of basically 12 months of off and on, sometimes more intense, sometimes less intense, of research and talking with Mark LeClaire that led me to this Kubrick Transformer thing. And the name does not reference the Transformers in the sense of the Hasbro toys or the movies. It's more in line with a guy named Maurice Cotterell, who wrote some pretty amazing books. One of them, The Tutankhamun Prophecy, which if you buy that, he shows these photographic overlays where he takes a picture of a Mayan mask, a jade mask. And when you overlay the photograph of these things and you manipulate them, certain images start to sort of project out of it. And there's a narrative that he says falls in line with the Mayan cosmology. And whether or not the Mayans did this on purpose or whether or not it's a coincidence, regardless, when you stare into this thing and you see these images, this narrative starts to emerge. And it's fully in line with all of the research that Cotterell presents in his books, and it tells this story. And it's in this story that sort of informs, at least it informed me, and gave me a better understanding of the fourth dimension's relationship to my third dimension. And so I named this Kubrick Transformer in honor of the research that Cotterell puts out, because he's another person who I think who puts his research out there so bravely and so profoundly, and is giving the reader and the public the opportunity to, you know, shut him down as a lunatic on one end, or to praise him beyond an appropriate level as a messiah or a genius. But regardless, the work is there. He puts itself out there, and I think it's brilliant. It's brilliant. So the Kubrick Transformer was named in honor of Maurice Cotterell. So brilliant guy.
I'm still a little bit confused as to what the Kubrick Transformer actually is or what it actually does.
Okay. So in this conversation with Mark LeClaire, we shared a love for the combining film with music. Kubrick, as a director, said he directs more like a conductor, that music is just an integral part of the cinematic experience as anything. I'm sure you've heard of the Pink Floyd Wizard of Oz phenomenon.
No, but I've heard of the Who Matrix phenomenon.
Okay, Andras Jones, a good friend of mine. Well, not a good friend of mine. Well, he's a friend of mine. I've talked to Andras on occasion, and the Matrix, the Lifehouse Matrix, is a perfect example of this. I learned about it through Pink Floyd and The Wizard of Oz. When I saw it, I became a full-blown – I was obsessed with it. Most people think of it as a stupid stoner trick. People see it once, they laugh, they forget about it. Other people don't laugh at all. They just find it boring and a waste of time. And those are all very valid criticisms and assessments of it. But for me, playing Dark Side of the Moon while watching The Wizard of Oz triggered something in my head that was like, this was an example of this thing that I was chasing, this mystery. And LeClaire shared this obsession. He saw the same thing in it that I saw. So we started to kind of compare notes with combining certain films with certain albums. So one of the ones is you play Pink Floyd's Echoes to the Jupiter and Beyond the Infinite section of 2001. And there's some claims that Pink Floyd scored that piece of music for Stanley Kubrick because it just seems to mesh so well with the images you're seeing and the music you hear. It's undeniable, seemingly, that they go together. There's some transference there. I shared with LeClaire an experiment I did. I had quit drinking for about a year. I had quit smoking marijuana, and I was as stone sober as they got. And about a year and a half into that period of my life, I decided, well, I got some marijuana, and I was interested in smoking for the first time in a long time. And I decided to take a walk, and as sort of a joke, I decided to, why don't I go to a movie in a movie theater with headphones? Why don't I watch a movie I had never seen before in the theater with Dark Side of the Moon on my headphones and just see if it works? Will it be entertaining or will it be boring? And I said to myself, within the first 15 minutes, I'll know if it's boring. And if it's boring, you know, I lose $8, you walk out of the theater, but big deal. You know, it was just sort of a media experiment. So I'm walking to the movie theater. I have my iPod and my headphones. And I roll one up, and I smoke. And as I'm paying for my ticket, I felt like the biggest fool on the planet. It just was the most absurd thing in the world. And I almost backed out of the experiment right then. But I said, all you're going to lose is $10 or $8 or how much the ticket was. You'll lose 10 minutes of your time, and you'll just be done with it. So I walk into the theater. I press play whenever, I don't know, I just, whenever it seemed like the right way, when the Warner Brothers logo was going to fade away or whatever. So this is Harry Potter 6. I forget which one it is. You know, I haven't read the books. I've never seen the movie. I sit down. I'm stoned. I listen to The Dark Side of the Moon. And next thing I know, 2.5 hours or 2 hours and 20 minutes go by. And it was one of the single most entertaining experiences of my life. There was obviously no intention between what I saw or what I brought out of the experience. It was just this merging of film and music. And like I said, it was thrilling. There were moments that kept reoccurring throughout this experience that mirrored the kind of exciting things of Dark Side of the Moon and The Wizard of Oz. And as I left the theater, I was sort of right there in the middle of the mystery again. All these coincidences that were occurring between the words and the music were ridiculous. And so I discussed this with Claire, and we began this search.
All right, we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with more buzzy experiences, no doubt, from William Klaus. Back in a minute. Don't you go anywhere. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the most sleep-deprived 2 hours in talk radio. I don't know, what's the longest you've ever gone without sleep, ladies and gentlemen? You know, it's been a hectic couple of weeks. I must tell you, for me, William, let me introduce you. I cut together 3 documentaries in 3 days. All right. 5:45 a.m., 8 a.m., and midday. Those were my 3 bedtimes, 3 days in a row. Oh, my God.
I don't know if coffee's strong enough, brother. I don't know if coffee's strong enough for that.
Well, I had not only coffee to fuel me, I also had copious quantities of rage because I'd stopped smoking weed.
Rage, baby. I love rage.
It's surprising how much anger can fuel you. And you know what? What can I say? What can I say? You get real angry, and you get a hell of a lot of energy. You know, you see fluoride being put into the water, and these people coming out and exposing it, and they get editorials beating the crap out of them in the media. That effed me off so much that I stayed up till 8 o'clock in the morning editing these videos to get their message out there. Another friend of mine, Russell Malcolm, he has his home and his business invaded without a warrant, and they destroy his complete business, put 8 people out of work, and kick him out of his house as well because he's exposing corruption at the local Auckland City Council. And then you got this other guy, Paul Waddell, who's one of only 3 people who's qualified in the country to test for electromagnetic radiation and EMF frequencies, that kind of thing. And, the room that he gets to do his conference at this big, you know, organics expo is surrounded by all of the other stalls and all of these people walking back and forth, completely interrupting it and that kind of thing. So, you know, with my editing prowess, all 3 of these people... and all their stories, well edited, finally get out there with correct audio, with correct visuals, the slides and everything cut in perfectly, and it's just like, yeah, I did it. I did something that nobody, I don't think, on Earth has ever done before.
It's a great feeling.
Mm-hmm. And the best part about it was I was helping people who could not do it. Okay, I had the skills and the abilities to do what I can do. They had the skills and abilities to do what they could do. But it was only once we complemented each other that we actually managed to create something that was actually meaningful, that was actually valuable, that could actually help people.
Absolutely. It's almost the only thing we can do, right, Vinny?
Yeah.
It's what, I mean,
if you're not helping people, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, you're just helping yourself. Yeah.
I am you, another me, or something like that. Is that the Mayan saying?
I think so.
Yeah.
Namaste.
Yeah.
Well, you know, spiritual bumper stickers are great, but, you know, you got to go beyond just a word sometimes. You got to go deeper. And, yeah, you know, it's collaboration. It's collaboration with like-minded people, and that's what the internet gave to me. It was the ability to work with someone like Mark LeClaire, because without the internet, I would never find someone so in tune with what I was thinking, and I would have never made what I felt were huge leaps in this spiritual journey. And God bless the internet. It's transforming our reality faster than we even know.
It into what? And this is another thing, blogs. Where does the term blogs come from? Does it come from the term Joe blogs, and that's where it comes from? You know, because that's who is doing the blogging. Just average people, Joe blogs.
It's a shorting of web log. So like a log, like a diary. It's a web log, and so web log is weird. Blog, people like it. It's funny, you know. A 4-letter word.
Reminds me of Ren and Stimpy. It's blog, blog, it's big, it's heavy, it's wood.
It's like the log lady in Log Lady in Twin Peaks.
I haven't seen that.
Oh, you'll love it. It's weird. How do I share this obsession about Pink Floyd and and Wizard of Oz, or, you know, Pink Floyd and Kubrick? Me and LeClaire, we're seeing the same things. We discussed this whole phenomenon, what we're seeing in it. We're collecting evidence on the internet that suggests that Kubrick was, in touch with what Roger Waters and Pink Floyd were doing with their music. Obviously, Roger Waters and Pink Floyd were aware of Kubrick. Was there any, collaboration directly between them? They seemed to have a very public feud. You know, we argued about whether or not this was intentional or this was just coincidence or evidence of something greater. And if it is evidence of something greater, just what is that and how does it relate to McLuhan and to Joyce and to this whole mystery and this whole path that I was going on? So we started playing most of the Pink Floyd albums alongside most of the Kubrick films. And, you know, it's one thing to be convinced in your own mind that this is working. It's another thing to have somebody all the way, 2,000 miles away agreeing with you and bringing up similar insights and similar things that are basically transferring between this sort of what I call media alchemy. You know, we're mixing ingredients and trying to come up with a new ingredient. We're mixing film with music and coming up with a new narrative or a new experience. So this media alchemy that we're doing, we're kind of finding that we're having objective results. that it's not just this one single individual subjective experience. There's something that we're both seeing. And we basically isolated three Pink Floyd albums that all seem to work with three specific Kubrick films, Metal, The Wall, and Dark Side of the Moon. And the three Kubrick films were Eyes Wide Shut, 2001, and The Shining. So The Shining was interesting because I hated that movie. But when I watched The Shining while listening to Pink Floyd's album Metal, I found it to be fascinating. There was something about the narrative that I wasn't seeing when I just listened to the standard audio track. It was as if the soundtrack of Pink Floyd allowed this narrative that was embedded within the film to sort of jump out. And so as we discussed this fact that these albums and these three albums and these three movies seem to have so much in common, LeClaire, who's a brilliant mind, way beyond mine, started to discuss with me sort of a mathematical theory of why this might occur. I don't think I was able to keep up with him. His intellectual ability was beyond mine, but I could help him with his research. Long story short, our communications seemed to break up at this point. We just weren't on the same level, even though I think he appreciated my input and I respected his vision. And we kind of started to drift apart in our research and our ability to share insights into this phenomenon. But then because these three soundtracks and these three movies seem to be interrelated, I came up with the idea of why don't I play all three movies at once and play one album. If I'm as crazy as doing what I've been doing before, this next step ahead, I figured I'm beyond, you know, thinking that this is just completely insane. Might as well just go one step further to see if I can see anything. So I had a TV with one movie and I had a laptop with two movies all playing at the same time with no sound. And I put on Pink Floyd's album, Dark Side of the Moon. So I'm watching three different sets of images and I'm listening to one album and I start to see something interrelated between two of the movies, but I can't watch all three at the same time. It's just too much information. Right? There's just too much information going on, and my brain kind of starts to shut down. To take another long story short, I ended up playing on a screen on the TV, 2001 A Space Odyssey, and on my laptop below it, The Shining. And I was listening to Pink Floyd's album, The Wall. And something uncanny jumped out of the screen. The music and the images fused in a way that after about a couple of days of tinkering and aligning, I found 82 minutes, which is the length of the album, The Wall. So 82 minutes of The Wall, 82 minutes of 2001, and 82 minutes of The Shining, when viewed in this arrangement that I describe at my blog, it is its own little film. It works not as like an uncontrollable chaos. Like I said, you have to see it, and I'm not going to pretend to explain it for you. You can go to my blog and read about it if you want to do this thing yourself. But
what's the link to your blog, by the way?
It's IAHUASCA.blogspot.com. Ayahuasca.blogspot.com. Anyways. So I have two movies, one album aligned, and it's not chaos. There's a poetry to it. There's a beauty to it. There's a narrative to it because the words and the music of the album are sort of explaining what's happening on the screen. Now, again, I can say that this makes sense, right? Just like somebody with a doctorate can say, Finnegan's Wake has a narrative. I don't know if you've ever opened up a book like Finnegan's Wake, but it is almost impossible to read unless you have the keys to unlock the narrative. And this thing I call the Kubrick Transformer, you can dismiss it. just like they dismiss a book like Finnegan's Wake. But I truly believe that it demonstrates or is evidence of this mystery. It's something that is unexplainable. It's uncanny. It's filled with so many coincidences that coincidence no longer is the word that should apply. I think you need to imply a word by Carl Jung called synchronicity. These are meaningful coincidences that happen non-locally or non-temporally. They seemingly are disconnected or unconnected, but when they happen, it's undeniable the message that it's trying to talk to you about. So I've gone beyond coincidence now in this long journey into synchronicity. And this is where Alan Green comes into the picture. Alan Green put out a book called The Sync Book. I found out about Alan Green through a gentleman named John Kidd. He was one of the first people that I brought the Kubrick Transformer to. I told Mark LeClaire about the Kubrick Transformer. He didn't seem to really be too impressed by it. He wasn't as excited about it as I was. But he told me to contact John Kidd. He said he made synchronicity videos, maybe that we would begin a dialogue. I talked to John Kidd. I learned about Alan Green. I began a dialogue with Alan Green, explaining to him this whole thing about the Kubrick Transformer. And out of conversations with Alan Green, which were very informative, we began a really nice back and forth that led to ultimately to the formation of this podcast we do called Always Record, which is essentially a podcast. It's 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours of me, Alan Green, and another genius named David Plait, who's also known as MK Ultrasound, where we kind of recognized that whenever we were on the telephone or Skype talking, we thought, God, I wish we recorded that. I'd like to go back and listen to what you just said, because I wasn't taking notes, but we're obviously all studying the same things. There's something very informative there. I wish I could listen to it. And so I basically approached Alan and said, you know, you're being interviewed on all these different shows and the interviewers aren't really asking you very good questions. It sounds like you're going through the motions every time you go through these different interviews. Why don't we just start our own radio station or our own radio show? And why don't we just talk about the things that we talk about when we're on Skype or we're emailing each other? And why don't we record it and call it a show? You know, if no one listens, big deal. Not, you know, no harm, no foul. But let's just get it out there in the internet. Let's just make it, give the people an opportunity to listen to these conversations. And also, I'll benefit from recording it because then I can go back and kind of review the topics that we addressed, and I can become better informed by that. So this, if anything, this Kubrick Transformer thing that I came up with, it brought me to Alan Green's front door. We developed this podcast called Always Record. There are 56 different episodes up at thesyncbook.com. It allowed me to get on 42 Minutes, which is a great podcast by Doug Bowles and Will Morgan. You can find episodes of 42 Minutes up at thesyncbook.com. And this Kubrick Transformer got me an invitation to be in the Sync Book Volume 2, which is obviously the second volume of the Sync Book, where different authors relate their stories and their experiences with synchronicity and what it means to them. So basically, this whole turn on, tune in, drop out, find the others, and then tell your story. And that's really all that my work has been about, has been this long process of going from instant karma and opening my eyes to the universe to, instead of just taking in media, actually putting out media. A strange journey, my friend.
Well, that's alchemy, isn't it? You know, when you bring things together from different things and you make a whole. It's otherwise known as alchemahole. And we'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com with William Klaus. Don't you go anywhere, folks. Divided we fall. Unity, please don't desert me.
Uh-oh. Speedway rappers, but I've never never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles, but I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual. I am
Welcome
not
back.
Incredible, so until I can say I'm credible.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that is not credible, but is definitely incredible, like an edible extraterrestrial. And my very special guest is William Klaus. Welcome back. Now, we've only got about 10 or 12 minutes or something like that to wrap up the show here, like the mafia wrap up a body in a carpet. So go for your life. What is it that you'd like to share with us now?
Essentially, so this is my journey, you know, and this is where I've been and where I am now. I think the Sync community, which is basically what it can be known, you know, a lot of people know the name Jake Kotze, a brilliant guy. There's so many people out there who I could say, Alan Green, David Plate, Will Morgan, Douglas Bowles. I'm going to forget all of you, Sybil Hunter, Mark LeClaire. We're under this umbrella. Alan Green has put out 2 books of the Sync book. 26 authors in each book. There are 52 different voices, basically, who have wrestled with this mystery in their lives, and they put themselves out there to talk about their experiences, how they process the experience, what their theory is. And really what it's all about for me is sort of when you open the mind's eye, you know, and you open the doors of perception and you reveal that lens, there's a lot of smudge on it. You know, Philip K. Dick wrote a book called Through a Scanner Darkly. Synchronicities are these little sparkles that direct you in the ways that you should go about polishing that lens, to clearing it so that you can see the universe more directly, become more in tune with what it is that what it's all about, essentially, right? So, you know, I mentioned Philip K. Dick. He's, I think, a person who suffered greatly from not living in the internet age. He's a great science fiction writer. He writes – his novels meant a whole lot to me because they deal with madness. And that's probably the one ingredient in the story that is apparent, but, you know, the pain and the cruelty that the universe can sometimes inflict upon you, that's everyone's got their share. So I'm not going to sit here and cry and whine about it. But Philip K. Dick.
Yeah, yeah. You're not going to sit around here like Ayahuasca the Grouch.
But Philip K. Dick informed his novels with the individual in a universe that changes suddenly and how they go about trying to put it all back together. And synchronicity is one of these tools that I think people should know about, so that they, when the universe does change on them, because it does happen, it's a tool, a very powerful tool for trying to put the pieces back together again. Basically I've been, recently reading these selected letters of Philip K. Dick. And the way things work, it's just bizarre. I was invited to interview his ex-wife, Tessa Dick, and I was also invited to interview David Gill of totaldickhead.blogspot.com. And basically, this is my final sort of message with synchronicity and what I'm coming to understand just exactly what synchronicity is it's the Holy Spirit. It for me, you know, it's in my individual world, is I go back to sort of that Catholic operating system. Everything, it goes in circles and cycles, and I reconnected with that Catholic teaching of the Trinity, you know.
Oh my God, that's exactly what I've been thinking about these last couple of months as well. It's like it's coming back in a circle for me, back to my Catholic upbringing. I'm becoming kind of like a more Christian, and I'm like, whoa, how did that happen?
It's phenomenal. And this understanding of the Holy Spirit is something that really isn't discussed in most Catholic education and in the Mass. But Philip K. Dick wrote a lot about the Holy Spirit. You know, it's also known as Sophia, wisdom, or the logos, or as I like to call it, or as someone put more accurately, the living word. What is the living word? The word is communication. Voices speak words. This is the voice of God that's being communicated through our universe. We're saturated in media. Why can't God speak through media, right? It's when you get deep into this connection and deep into this understanding, it's nice to find something like the Holy Spirit instead of something like Satan, you know, because I think ultimately you come to this fork in the road with this kind of research and this kind of mystery, and you can either decide it's all evil, that the universe is here to grind you up and spit you out, that it's here to destroy you, that death is certain for everybody, and that this is just a bad place. And I certainly felt like that might be true. I've spent weeks in that mindset where that was true, you know. But I've even when that was true, I still made it through the day and kept going forward. And to now, my understanding is, you know, the sinking is everywhere. You know, you can see this Holy Spirit in everything if you only have the lens to see it. But it's the polishing of that lens. It's the work that you have to do to make sure that your lens is as clear and as precise as it can be, that you can start to see that. And I
reminds me of something that Bill Hicks said. He said watching television is like taking a black spray paint can and spraying it over your third eye.
Right. No. But I think there's great work done by people who will tell you, no, you can still see that in television, but you have to change the sense ratios of your mind. You have to get educated. You know, you can't say, I didn't like math as a kid. You know what? Just because the educational system wasn't able to teach you calculus by the age of 17 doesn't mean you can't learn calculus by the age of 30 or 40 or 50. But if you upload calculus into your brain, you're going to see the universe differently. And you owe it to yourself to not say, you know, my educational system was a piece of crap. It didn't understand me as a person, and it wasn't able to teach me calculus. I have that ability. I'm a human being. Calculus is something that human beings came up with. It's a revelation of a cosmic order. And go take a class or go on the internet and find how to learn how to do calculus. If you don't know how to do calculus and you don't know how to do algebra, start with algebra. Do geometry. People called it sacred geometry for a reason, because it opened up the universe. Believe that you are smarter than your original operating system. Believe that you are smarter than what they tell you on television. Challenge yourself every day to take on these cognitive challenges to sharpen your lens and become more powerful and more in control of your destiny. And it's, you know, a sappy message maybe. But usually that, you know, I've just found out that stuff tends to turn out to be true. And, you know, be brave enough to look like a fool, be brave enough to be sappy and corny, laugh at yourself every day. This is just what I've learned.
You know, I appear to have gotten it down.
Well, I mean, you've got the greatest hair in radio, right?
It's true. I don't have a face for radio. Sorry.
But, you know, as I've been on this podcast, I've done this blog. I was invited onto Red Ice Radio to do an interview. And what's amazing when you put yourself out there, people will attack. They'll tell you that you're crazy. They'll tell you that they're wrong. Some people might even tell you that you're part of an MK Ultra propaganda machine and question who your handler is and who you're working for. There's a lot of angry people out there. And that's just because they're frustrated beyond anger with the position they are in their life at this moment. And their lens is a little too clouded, and they're not seeing the beauty and the joy or the Holy Spirit that's surrounding them. And you got to be patient with these people. And I don't think I think you need to be strong enough to enter into a dialogue with these people and to continue to kind of listen to their tortured message and try to pass on a little bit of humor. pass on a little bit of understanding, reflect upon where maybe I was at that point in my life, and to try to even share the time with the people who see, you know, like I said, there is conspiracy, but conspiracy isn't in everything. It isn't in my work. I'm just a dude who's telling you where I am right now and where I've been and where I might be going. And, you know, if you're seeing a conspiracy in the work that I'm doing or the work of Alan Green with Sync Book Press, I'm just, you know, you're just, I think you're in the wrong place, you know?
Yeah. I do think that what happens is when you get into the idea of conspiracy, you begin to believe that everything's a conspiracy. And what's interesting is if you don't believe in conspiracy, you believe that people who do believe in conspiracy think everything's a conspiracy. And people who come to this, Vinny, you think everything's a conspiracy? I say, no, not everything's a conspiracy, just most things. You know, occasionally there'll be things that aren't the result of a complete and utter scumbag kind of thing. There's plenty of genuine people out there who just, you know, get stuff wrong or whatever. It doesn't mean they're part of MK Ultra, that they're a Delta or a Beta or a Theta or a Sata or a Satan or something like that. You know, who cares? Well, what have these people got going on in their lives? And the answer is they don't have a whole lot going on in their lives. That's the problem. It's because you try to live your life vicariously through other people's experiences, other people's research, and you ain't got nothing of your own to contribute. So all you do is repeat, attack, and push out. And you got nothing to push out with, okay? Go out there, do something of your own. And here's the point, and I think you made this point earlier. Turn on, tune in, drop out. What do you do after all of that? You go and find some people. You find the others, man. I've seen this happen to a number of truthers, bro, who they wake up to the New World Order, they start exposing scumbaggery, and they don't find anybody who agrees with them, so they become bitter, and they wind up hating humanity as a result. All right, William Klaus has been my very special guest, ayahuasca.blogspot.com. Go and check it out, and we'll see you again sometime, folks.